to the Big Ugly Podcast. Your hosts, the California Cajun, Craig, and Nate the Great.
I am the California Cajun. This is Nate the Great, and we are the Big Ugly Podcast. I did not agree to have that intro play. That is out of my hands. If you got a problem with it, please write to our staffing department, and we can fire everybody involved.
Yeah, they literally should have seen our faces. We were looking at each other confused.
Just we're offensive linemen through and through. No bells, whistles, or any kind of fanciness, and we got this hyper intro with the weird voices. I don't know. I'm not gonna sleep well tonight. That scared me a little bit. We haven't done the show in a while. For anyone who is new, anyone who stumbled upon us in your BS and beer feed, this is the Big Ugly Podcast. We talk about the offensive line, primarily, sometimes defensive line, but our focus is the trenches, the unsung heroes, the stuff that actually wins football games, the linemen.
Craig, it's good to be back talking about the line. You know, yes. I've been preparing for my own offensive line coaching and defensive line coaching. That's been the off season, and now I've been watching, see what's going on with the combine. You know, reading about the draft. You know, just trying to keep myself not doing too much football stuff, but it just kind of happens naturally for me.
If you say one more time, I'm gonna beat you up. See, I'm doing the other side of the offensive line thing, where I'm just getting as fat as possible and hoping that works. You know, that's a strategy, right? You know, just trying to live my life as a unit. All 4'9" of me or whatever the hell I am. So this is our first show back. What we're gonna do is we're talking about the rookies from last year that we highlighted right before our show fell off the rails because the wrestling podcast kicked us off. And then we're gonna talk about the rookies last year that did well, rookies that we were impressed with, rookies that maybe we wanted to see more from, and we're gonna highlight a couple of new guys in this year's draft to keep your eye on.
All right, you want me to get started, or you want?
Yeah, let's kick it off. Let's jump right into it. I thought we had a music stinger right there, but we're gonna get on with our producer about getting his cue set up. What we're going to do right now is we're going to talk about some of our 2022 draft class. And Nate the Great, go ahead and take it away.
I feel like you can't talk about this draft class without talking about Jameer Salier. You know, Rashawn Slater goes down, bicep injuries, and they throw this unsung hero in at left tackle, and he grades out to be the highest grading offensive lineman for rookies in 2022. And I feel like he did a great job. I felt comfortable with him right there. I wish that they wouldn't have re-signed Trey Pipkins and they just bounce him over to the right side. And I feel like we would have some solid right tackles, a right tackle and left tackle, you know? So, you know, I'm kind of lingering and watching how they're going to move that around. I really see him there by the end of the year. Trey Pipkins is known to miss some time, so I'm hoping that he gets in there and doesn't let go of the spot, because he did phenomenal as a rookie at left tackle.
Yeah, that's how a lot of great linemen kind of break in, is they get drafted because they got potential or because they're consistent guys, and an injury in front of them, they step in and they don't give it back. You know, we can't, you know, the Saints fans listening to this will talk about, you know, how Zach Strief was a nobody until somebody went down in front of him and he was a starter for years. People talk about how Ramchek wasn't a starter until Strief got hurt, kind of that revolving door. It's all about getting your opportunities. And that is definitely one rookie that made the most of his opportunities. He's going to have a bright career, hoping he can keep that momentum going forward.
Yeah. And 207 pass snaps. He only allowed 11 hurries. That's going up against Crosby. That's going up against some premier pass rushers, you know. I feel like if you're only letting up 11 hurries, I feel like you got mega potential, you know.
Absolutely. Especially as a rookie. Let's see. So what I wanted to touch on, this one, I picked this one because me and Nate feel very strongly about why I picked this one. This is Braxton Jones on the Bears last year from Southern Utah. Now, playing offensive line is really hard. Playing offensive line with a running quarterback is so much harder. Every pass play is a running play also, and every run play is doubly hard because the opponent sees it coming. So Braxton Jones, what he did, he gave up 4 sacks in the first 4 weeks. That's a lot. With a running quarterback, maybe not as many as it sounds. After those first 4 weeks, he only gave up 3 more the rest of the season. He earned the starting job by week 1. It was in training camp where no injury required. He beat out the guy in front of him. What he was able to do with that kind of an offense with the Bears, they got a running quarterback. I like his potential fields. I like his potentials, but as much as the next guy at this stage in his career, he's a runner first. And oh my goodness, it is hard to pass block for a run first quarterback. Me and Nate can tell you from experience, it is hard. You get no credit and things go wrong real fast. So for him to improve as dramatically and quickly as he did, I think that was pretty impressive, especially from a rookie.
I agree. I think that, it's very underplayed, the technique and the ability to be able to move around as a lineman when you are blocking for a running quarterback. They're in an area 1 second and then another second they're in a different area, and the only ones that can really see them is the defender, because you're supposed to have your head in your block, so it's not like you're tracking your quarterback and where he is at all times.
Exactly.
It's just unrealistic. You're not going to block anybody that way,
And it kind of lends to the new age of football that we're in, where you have these really athletic tackles, because if, you look at the old days, if you got an offensive line with, Jonathan Ogden or, a Larry Orlando Pace or something like that, they're not going to be able to run for 10 seconds sideline to sideline while this guy looks for something downfield. You need linemen that can kind of move the line of scrimmage, move the pocket sideline to sideline. And that's just not a skill set that we used to have. But look at how the league is now. You need mobile quarterbacks, even if they get hurt every 4 weeks. Who else you got?
Another one that I wanted to talk about that we had touched on last year was Tyler Lindenbaum from the Baltimore Ravens.
I remember us talking about him before the draft, yeah.
Yes, he had a great year, I feel. I watched him, and I seen that he's definitely going to be a staple in the offensive line for a long time, like Corey Linsley and – Jeff Saturday for all those years. I really seen glimpses of all that. I really did. He had a 71.1 run blocking grade amongst all centers. That's ninth.
Wow.
Which is damn good for a rookie. Absolutely. In 100 run blocking snaps, he was able to get to the second level. He was able to do what he needed to do, And so I feel like, That's a strong center force right there to be reckoned with for a bunch of years to come,
And just how difficult it is to play center, where you not only are you in charge of everyone's job, you're in charge of all the communication, and then also you're expected to get to next level, to get down the line of scrimmage, to get up to pick linebackers off when they know you're coming and they're not trying to let you get to them. Yeah, playing center is tough, man. It's definitely, if there's say like a center and a tackle and they're arguing about whose O-line it is, it's definitely the centers every time.
I feel like, it's also a little overrated for the center to be like, oh, I do everything on this offensive line. Really, you have tunnel vision. You're right there in the middle. You can't see as much as a tackle can that's ready to get some speed in a, pretty much a 2-point stance. You're down there in a 3-point stance, pretty much with your hand on the ball. A tackle that's kind of more upright, so he could be in a speed technique, can see a lot more than a center. Okay.
I feel like I may have touched a nerve there with my offensive tackle co-host here. All right, speaking of interior line, I've got another one for you. About Dylan Parham for the Raiders. So he is from Memphis. Among all rookie interior offensive linemen, he was the second highest graded per PFF. I know PFF is, some people think it's gospel and some people think it's a joke. For whatever metric you use, it does, they do grade out a lot of snaps. So there, it's at least something to pull from. So the Raiders system is kind of unique in that it made Derek Carr look real bad and it made their running backs look real good last year. It's their first year in that system. We saw the quarterback fell off and the running game shot up. So you got to look at not only the people who are playing in that system, but who was able to succeed in it. And the Raiders were good at about two things. One was making people hate them because they're the Raiders, and running the football. And that running back, they had Jacobs. Did I get that name right?
Yep, Josh Jacobs.
There you go. Monster year. Fantastic running back. Does not get to second level. Does not have the kind of game that he does without that offensive line. And the way that Parham and the rest of that interior offensive line was able to run block in that system, that made him into a superstar. And now he's got these contract negotiations talking about franchise tags. He's going to get paid. And the second contract for running backs is a dicey proposition, but he did absolutely enough to get that big paycheck. And that's in large part to that O-line, including a rookie who stepped into a, what you would say is a tough situation and really excelled.
I agree. I think, you know, when you play for the Raiders in any generation, you have so much hate in the trenches just because you're a Raider already. And believe me, I would love to be in the trenches with them because I'd be taking all the cheap shots I could at them just because they're the Raiders. But
no, we don't advocate cheap shots on the Big of the podcast. We are clean, fair, and balanced on this.
I'll pull on the Dominic and Sue on them. It's all right.
Oh, it's brutal.
But anyway, I feel like interior line, you know, he's going up against Chris Jones two times a year. He went up against Aaron Donald last year for the Raiders. He went up against some pretty solid defensive tackles, and I feel like he did do really well.
Yeah, and then with the way that system worked, it was all funneled through the running game, and you can't do that without an offensive line that's able to move the line of scrimmage.
All right. Yeah, so another guy I wanted to talk about, we're sitting here talking about the highs of some players. I want to talk about the low of a guy in Evan Neal. I feel like Evan Neal, you know, it was a tough transition for him going from left tackle in Alabama to the right tackle. He graded in the he was the second worst offensive tackle in 2022.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know,
we were fighting over this guy preseason, too. Everybody wanted to draft Neal.
We were. And hey, you know what? I'm not saying that this is going to be his career. I feel like a guy like that with that size and that kind of athletic ability, you know, you got to give him a chance. But, you know, I seem to remember a guy that the Chargers drafted way back a couple years ago by the name of DJ Fluker, who was a tackle for Alabama that ended up being a guard for us and ended up being a guard for some other teams as well. So, you know, I don't really put that on him as well, but you know, I feel like, you know, when you're big, people want to have the mauler at left tackle, but like we discussed now in today's game, how fast paced it is, you kind of need like a more slim athletic tackle like Lane Johnson and you know, guys of that stature, you know. So I feel like, you know, he has his work cut out for him.
Yeah, it's a couple of things about Neal in that transition. One, you can't give up on a lineman year one. Sometimes it takes, you know, 3 years for these guys to figure it out. It is such a different level of competition when you're playing in college. There's usually one defensive lineman on the other team where you go, okay, that's the game breaker. We got to scheme that guy. You get to the NFL, and every single one of those guys on that line are those guys. So you can't just give up on a guy year one, no matter how bad it is. What do you think? Is it after year three before a player becomes a bust? I'm thinking you got to give him 3 years. That's what the Saints did with Cesar Ruiz. A lot of Saints fans wanted to cut and run with him. I think you need 3 years minimum. What do you think?
I think that you could even last out the rookie deal. You know, that's only potentially a 4-year deal. So, to get the full contrast of what this player can be, I believe most players need to have their full contract play out in order to see what the true value is of them, you know? So that's how I feel about it. 3-4 years is pretty accurate. I think we're kind of like in the same ballpark there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Another thing people don't take into account is just flipping a guy from left to right. Is how often do you have these elite, let's be real. Your best lineman in high school is your left tackle. Your best lineman in college is usually your left tackle. And you draft a tackle and you want him to be your guy, but you have a left tackle. You need a right tackle. So you draft the best tackle available who's a left tackle. You expect him to move over to the right. And some guys just can't make the change. I know I hate to bring everything back to the Saints, but we are a Saints channel. When we drafted Anders Pete, he was drafted to be a right tackle. He never made it work at right tackle. He ended up playing guard, and in spot duty at left tackle, he played very well. But he ended up having a decent career as a guard. How decent is up to Saints fans? That's a point of contention. But some guys just can't make that change. It's, you know, as a center, it's hard for me to kind of explain how different it is. It's kind of like trying to play baseball left-handed. You know, when you switch from one side that you've been doing for probably 10, 15 years, suddenly you're playing the other side and you're still playing tackle. You're still doing your kick step, but everything's backwards. And some people just don't, they're just not comfortable doing it.
I agree. I feel like my best side to play on is the left side at left tackle too. I've also had experience playing right tackle, and it's the mechanics are different. You spend all this time building power and a certain step in a direction. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard for you to change that step and that power just right off the bat, you know? So that's also why I do think that, you know, it could take him that year to be a learning curve for him to finally be the player that he is this coming year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And rewriting all that muscle memory. It's hard.
Oh yeah. You're using they say you use a different part of your brain for different sides of your body. So he built up the whole left side of his brain. Now he's got to build up the right side of his brain, you know?
And if any player group is smart enough to do it, it's us linemen. We're clearly the brains of this operation, and I'll hear no other questions about it. Okay, so you had one kind of disappointing guy. And because I am an unabashed Saints fan, I was beating the Trevor Penning drum before the draft. I'm going to go back to my guy, Trevor Penning. Oh, Trevor. So, preseason, he's mauling people. He's sloppy. He's making mistakes. But the physicality is there, and he's throwing people around. And he gets a bum injury. I think it's a Liz Frank in his foot. This is his first injury. Toe injury of some kind. I think it's turf toe. Yeah, turf toe first. Then he misses most of the year, comes back really late, starts to work in, starts the first game, starts the last game of the season, throws people again, mauling people, and gets a Liz Frank in his foot and gets hurt again. So now we're looking into a second training camp where he's coming back from injury and seeing if he's going to play. And for a first round investment on a tackle, when it wasn't like he had a starter in front of him to train behind, he was going to be the guy. You know, Hurst is in front of him, and Hurst is a rotational guy at best. So the job was his to lose, and he couldn't stay healthy. And he showed real potential. And it's one of those things where it kind of feels like he was the second. We picked the first round twice last year. It kind of feels like he's a first round pick this year because this is the year we're expecting him to play more. And it's one of those things. If he can stay on the field, he's really been showing something. He could really be that mean, nasty, dominant force you want on the line. And if he can't stay healthy, it's just another one in the pile of Saints players that can't stay on the field.
Yeah, you know, I do believe that there also is a transition for players when they realize that they really got to tone certain things back as far as, you know, just being overly physical. Yeah, it's fun to watch, and yeah, everyone's gonna love it, but your body might not last as long. You know, you look at bruising running backs, you look at bruising linemen, you look at bruising linebackers, they're falling apart by the end of the year, you know. And I feel like You know, there's certain times where you have to play smart and not so physical, you know, and hopefully that's something that he learns how to do this year. I feel like he's going to be great for you guys for the next 10 years. So why not get it started this coming year, you know?
So before we move on, I want to make sure we give a shout out to our BS and Beer parent family. And find us on Twitter. We have the Big Ugly _ podcast. You see it on our screen right there. For those of you watching on video, we love to interact with everybody. We want some input on what you want us to talk about on the show. Tell us how bad Nate's beard looks this week. Make fun of me for not being able to grow one. Reach out to us. We want to talk to you.
Hey, also thanks to the BS and Beer Media for that that birthday shout out on the Frenemies podcast. You know, ever since I've been a part of the podcast here at BS and Beer Media, they've made me feel really comfortable and a part of the team. Thank you guys.
Oh, the Frenemies podcast. If I cared even a little bit about fantasy football, I sure would give them a listen. All right, let's talk about the future, the bright, shiny, beautiful future. Let's talk about a couple of guys we're looking for in this year's 2023 NFL draft. Nate, who you got?
Okay, so I'm not going to talk about the top prospects that we've been seeing in the draft process. You know what I'm saying? There's a guy that I feel is arguably one of the best overall linemen in the draft, and that is Olu Oluwatomi. He is the center from Michigan. And this guy has, you know, he was an honorable mention in the All-CC pick in his first year as a starting at center. He played guard in the only game he could not start at center because a hand injury. So the guy wants to play. An injury is not going to keep him out. I love seeing stuff like that. You know, he was also a second team All-CC selection in 2021. He won the Outland Award for the top offensive lineman or defensive lineman. It could go to either guy, and he won that top award. He also won the Remington Award, which is nation's top center. And, you know, I was expecting him to be one of the top guys coming into this draft, but looking at everything and reading everything and stuff like that, they only have him projected to be a fourth round pick. I feel like someone's gonna land a dog right there in the middle that could help anchor their offensive line. And usually that's how it goes for centers. They're kind of an overlooked position. I agree. You know, even if, you know, they're not as athletic or good looking as the tackles, you know, they are still a key piece to this offensive line.
Well, I agree. They can't grow the best beards, but that is still owned by tackles. Well, my guy that I want to talk about first is a little more well known. He's a little higher up on the draft boards, and that's the TCU guard Steve Avila, or Avia, if you have an accent that I don't have. And what I wanted to talk about from his perspective is the run blocking, just the sheer damned run blocking. TCU had no business playing in some of the games they played with. Anyone who watched the national championship could probably attest to that. But they got into those games and were in those situations because they could run the football. And they were those words are spelled wrong on purpose because there's a mindset to running the football. And their offensive line, TCU, was mean. They were undersized, they were unheralded, and they moved people. And we're not talking about maybe not SEC defensive lines, but Big 12 D lines are no joke. They're not playing in the WAC. They're not playing in the Pac-12. Ha! Suck at SC. They're moving real players up in the Big 12. And they ran the ball on everybody. They held in games against Oklahoma, Kansas, and Oklahoma State combined 3 sacks total in those 3 games, that offensive line. So they protected. They ran the ball. I want to see Avila at the next level. I think his skill set could translate to a few teams, particularly some, maybe the second round. He's got that kind of a grade. I don't know that any guards go first round anymore. They're unheralded and unappreciated. much like the rest of the offensive line. But I'd love to see him land somewhere. Maybe the Bills, maybe the Titans, somewhere that leans into that running game. It could be a really good fit for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you play on a team like that that goes, you know, as far as they did to the championship game, the college championship game, you know, you need solid linemen. And, you know, them making it that far and the way that team operated is a tribute to guys like this on that offensive line.
Absolutely.
Another guy I just want to vaguely mention before I get to my next lineman, just because, you know, I hate this whole the guy's arms are too short to be a tackle in the NFL. Look at Rashawn Slater. His arms were they said that his arms are too short to be a tackle in the NFL. Rookie, all pro rookie year. This next guy hopefully follows in his footsteps out of the Northwestern as well. Peter Skronski. He also
that's a fun name.
Is a he is also a guy that, you know, they're saying he has too small arms. He might be better suited at guard. But Northwestern is putting out some pretty damn good tackles in the last years.
Yeah, they have a great program for the offensive line.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, he's gonna follow in Rashawn Slater's footsteps. I feel like whoever gets him is gonna be, you know, it's gonna be another great pickup for them. But the next offensive lineman that I would like to talk about is Joe Tippmann. And yes, offensive line of Wisconsin factory it is back. They are going to start churning out these linemen again. And, you know, he played more than 1,400 snaps, you know, and I feel like that alone right there shows durability for alignment, you know.
I'm trying to wrap my head around playing that many snaps in college without missing time. That is, jeez. And like we said, O-line, we just get so beat up that, look at him. That's a fun face. He looks like he walked out of a Cracker Barrel right when he took that picture.
That's a beautiful man right there.
Isn't he? His beard's not as good as yours, but that's, few are, Nate, few are. Yeah, man, that is some impressive durability. Especially playing in an offense like Wisconsin runs, where you're just bashing people all day.
And again, he's one of those guys that aren't really above on the radar that you're hearing about through this draft process. He's just a guy that I feel is going to be great for an interior line on someone's team that's waiting for an anchor and waiting for someone that could be durable. You know, I'm looking forward to see where these guys land, because there's plenty of teams that could use some solid interior line play.
Absolutely. Everyone can use it. Not everybody has it. And speaking of interior line play, my last guy I want to talk about, another fan favorite for the Saints to go after, Osiris Torrence. And that is for the guard from the University of Florida. So Florida sucks. People who like Florida suck, but they put out a lot of talent lately, and their O-line has been pretty good. Good enough to maybe elevate their inconsistent quarterback into top four potential, if anyone's following the NFL draft in general. Torrence is a hell of a player. He's big, even for a guard. He's 6'5", so a lot of guards don't need to be that big. He's 6'5", 330. He's got freaking big arms, big legs. He's thick like a tree trunk. He can move bodies. He played until his senior year. Didn't leave early when he had a chance to last year. I like him as a prospect. I think there's a lot of offensive lines he could slide right into and start day one. And Saints might be one of them if they're looking for a guard as early as pick 40. He might not be there at 40, but there's definitely places that he could step in and start immediately. The way that Florida runs their offense, sometimes players are going to be better at the next level, or they're going to be less productive at the next level. And it's all based on how they do things in Florida, which is stupid because Florida does things stupidly. And if you disagree with me, find us on Twitter at BigUgly_podcast and tell me I'm wrong. But I like Torrence. I want to see him at the next level. As Dave from the big show, BS and Beer, will call him Cyrus the Virus, because he can't pronounce Torrence without an A in it. I like him. I would take him on my team yesterday.
You know, one thing that came apparent to me when you brought him up, and the guys that I've talked about and the guys you already talked about as well, is that this draft is actually pretty deep with offensive linemen, you know, and good solid linemen. You know, if they got these kind of guys that are, you know, pretty much going unrecognized, you know, and that says a lot about the depth of this line class. And, you know, this is going to be a great year to fill up those trenches for any team. Yeah,
really. And if you're a team that has, you know, starters and you feel good about your starters, you still want to draft guys. You got to have youth, and you got to have rotational pieces for when people go down, because the line is hard. People are going to go down every year. It's going to happen. Build out your depth.
Definitely.
Well, Nate, I think that's all we had scheduled to talk about this week. It's been great talking about offensive line with you. I'd love to get some food now, though, because we've been not eating for the last 45 minutes and I am starving. Here's what I end with. Offensive linemen like yourself, post game, you just won. You're pumped up. You're feeling good. What are you eating post game? What's your post game meal?
Well, once upon a time ago, I had a teammate. We beat a team called the Ducks and made some duck
gumbo, Nate. It was duck gumbo.
Yeah, duck gumbo. And oh my goodness,
it was delicious, good, wasn't it?
It was delicious. So, you know, I like to have the meaningful grub after, you know what I'm saying? Symbolic. Yeah. Why not? You know, but I'd have to say after coaching, at the end of the games, they get sandwiches from Jersey Mike's.
Oh, nice.
And I love them.
Jersey Mike's doesn't miss. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking like tacos, burritos, sushi, and then you hit me with the blast from the past. I'm all nostalgic now. Oh, look at that. I'd make a gumbo right now if it didn't take me 6 hours. All right. Well, I think that's all we have for this week. We're going to take some suggestions. We're going to come back with our top five O-lines next week, probably, or the next time we record this. Not sure if we're doing it every week or not yet. Depends on if you guys have a good time with us and you want to hear from us again. So, for Nate the Great, Big Nate, handsome, bearded, Viking-looking son of a bitch that he is, I'm the California Cajun. Thank you for joining us at the Big Ugly Podcast. Stay big, stay ugly.
Remember to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at BS and Beer Media. Or if you're old and want to write a strongly written letter, email us bs and beer@icloud.com.